Acharya Asatara Sathya Shri Srimana's Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Shri Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Shri Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Shama Sundar Gopa Gopinath Shamakund Radhakund Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Swami Ki Jai, Purushottamas Ki Jai, Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Srimati Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveda, Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, glories to Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto. We're on the last chapter, just in case you didn't realize that the tenth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is the last chapter in the second canto. So we're almost at the end of the second canto. We're on text 45. We're continuing with the purport of text 45. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Utiraya Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, translator and commentator. By regular attendance in the classes of the Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that's troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed in loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised in transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. So this is text 45. We'll chant the verse again. Nasya karmani janmadhau.
Nasya karmani janmadhau.
Ha Parasyanu vidhiyate. Parasyanu vidhiyate. Katritva parishe dartam. Katritva parishe dartam. Mayaya ropitam hitat. Mayaya ropitam hitat. Nasya karmani janmado. Parasyanu vidhiyate. Kartritva pratised hartam. Mayaya ropitam hitat. Please chant. Nasya karmani janmado.
Nasya karmani janmado.
Nasya karmani janmado.
Parasyanu vidhiyate.
Parasyanu vidhiyate.
Kartritva pratishe hartam.
Kartritva pratishe hartam.
Mayaya ropitam hitat.
Mayaya ropitam hitat. Nasya karmani janmado. Parasyanu vidhiyate. Kartritva pratishe dartam. Mayaya ropitam hitat. Nasya karmani janmado. Parasyanu vidhiyate. Katritva parishe dartam. Mayaya ropitam hitat. Nasya karmani janmado. Parasyanu vidhiyate. Kartritva pratishe dartam. Mayaya ropitam hitat. So we'll go for the word for word. Na. Never. Asya. Of the creation. Karmani. In the matter of. Janma ado. Creation and destruction. Parasya. Of the supreme. Anuvidhiyate. It is so described. Kartritva, engineering. Pratisedya artam. Counteract. Mayaya. By the external energy. Aropitam. Is manifested. Ki. For. Tat. The creator. Can you leave it on the word for a minute? Go back up. Thanks. So here's the question. Do you remember what the verse is about from yesterday? Yes, Prabhu. Apurna. We have them. You don't have a mic somewhere. It's lost.
I remember it saying that the Lord is not directly involved in the creation and destruction.
The Lord is not directly involved in the creation. I have to admit that when I read that, my first reaction was disappointment. But then I realized, I just have to think it through a little. It's not that he's not involved, but he's not directly involved. Okay, sorry, but thank you. Thanks for that. Here's Srila Prabhupada's translation and his purport. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that the material nature is the creator. So let's do that again. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. Let that sink in for a minute or two. What is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. Omaginati mirandasya janandana salakaya chaksu umilitam jena tasvai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master very kindly forced to open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Therefore, I am totally indebted to him and beg for service life after life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So this purport was read partially, but I'd like to just summarize it because it's all so connected. I'll summarize it after we read our section. Sorry. We start with, because Karanavasai Vishnu, that's where we're starting. Because Karanavasai Vishnu is a plenary expansion of Krishna, it is he who electrifies the matter put into motion. So, previously it was described that there are different types of understanding of how this world is created. There's different types of understanding, different degrees. Some are fallacious and some are partial understandings. So a less intelligent or the least intelligent person thinks matter just appeared and it's the source of everything in its own way. It just happened by the Big Bang and that's how it started. That's a less intelligent or not very intelligent thing. Then Srila Prabhupada analyzes that proposal, and as we're familiar so many times, he gives so many different examples to say, how can something be created from nothing? And it's such a simple, logical explanation, and it's so simple, it's amazing how we missed it before we heard it from Prabhupada. Anyway, so how can something, have we had any experience that something is created from nothing? Or have we had any experience that an explosion happens by itself? And in fact, if we think it through, if there was an explosion here, there, anywhere, immediately there would be people investigating why and how and who and what happened to make that explode, and who did it. And in fact, if there was an explosion and a building was destroyed and this and that or something, and nobody investigated, wouldn't you think, what's going on here? What's wrong? What, you know, did they lose all their funding? Did the police department lose all their funding or whatever? You know what I mean? So immediately so that argument in one sense is very easily defeated with that type of logic. It's very easily defeated. But somehow or other, it's very widely accepted. There was, back in the, who knows which days, but back in the old days of ISKCON, there was a really nice cassette, so we're putting it in a time frame, a really nice cassette that somebody or other did, a little spoof on this, the world happened, it happened by chance or by nothing. And so the little scene of the comedy was that person goes into a restaurant and he wants some of the soup. But before he wants the soup, he wants to know what the ingredients are. So he asks the waitress, what's in the soup? And she says, I don't know. And he said, well, who made it? Ask the person who made it. And she said, we don't know who makes it. It just appears. Every day it just appears. And the person said, he wasn't very satisfied with that because it's not a very satisfactory answer, is it? It just appears. We don't know who made the soup. We don't know what's in it. It's just soup. Just take it. And he said, no, I don't want it. He said, well, you know, the college students eat it up like anything. It was really, really good. Anyway, so, it's not a very logical or satisfying answer. It just appeared, or it was an explosion or whatever. So then there's another layer, another level of understanding that there's a force, a supreme force behind things. But Prabhupada pointed out, and he often points out, that it's incomplete. Brahman realization, it's a fact, it's a factual level of realization to realize that there's an energetic force pervading all of the universe, but it's incomplete. beyond that is another level. Higher than that is another level, Paramatma, that the Lord is in the heart. That's another level, but it's also incomplete. And the highest level is Bhagavan realization, to know that the Supreme Lord, and this is what Prabhupada's going to stress in our part of the purport, that the Supreme Lord, yes, he's involved in directing the ingredients or providing the ingredients that Lord Brahma takes and then recreates, Sarga and Vishaga, and engineers the universe and the bodies and the planets and for the people according to their past karmic activities. But aside from doing that creation, he's a person enjoying in his own abode, with his own past and with his own eternally perfect living entities, serving him in various ways. So, and we can, and logically going through those levels of realization, that's the most complete. Yes, God's a person. Yes, he's in charge of everything. Yes, he's the maintainer and creator of the material world. And yes, he has his own abode, his own act. In other words, he's not just the creator. And this is elaborated on right in the very, very first verse of the Bhagavatam, 1.1.1, that the Supreme Lord, he is the creator, he is the bewilderer, he is, and he has his own abode, and he's separate from it all. So that's a brief summary of some of the things that were spoken of yesterday. And I really like the fact that Govinda Prabhu, he just focused in on the glance, the potency of the glance of the Lord, and then connected it up to Sudama Vipra. It was so nice. Okay, anyway, Hare Krishna. Okay, so we're on. Because Karana Dakshai Vishnu is the plenary expansion of Krishna, it is he who electrifies matter and puts it into motion. The example of electrification is quite appropriate. A piece of iron is certainly not fire, but when the iron is made red hot, certainly it has the quality of fire through its burning capacity. And here's the philosophical explanation. Why is he giving that example? Matter is compared to the piece of iron, and it is electrified or made red hot by the glance or manipulation of the Supreme Consciousness of Vishnu. So that's such an interesting point, and that's the point, one of the points that Govinda Prabhu was making yesterday and has been made many times, that the glance of the Lord is so potent that it infuses the living entities in the material world. Or the and some other examples of the Lord's glance, Lord Ramachandra, when he glanced over the ocean, when it didn't acknowledge his presence when he wanted to cross the ocean, he didn't come forward. He glanced over the ocean, and what was the result? All the aquatics started to feel, oh my God, who's turned up the heat? It's getting really uncomfortable here. We're going to boil to death in this ocean by the angry glance of the Lord. And then the ocean personified came forth and apologized and pacified the Lord with prayers, and everything was put back into normal. But this is Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Ajami, that any part of the Lord's body is as potent as any other part of the body of the Lord. So it's not that he has to do things personally with his hands to engineer things or whatever. He can hear with his hands. He can energize things with his eyes, and so many other examples are there. And they're given for us to expand our conception of God. Most of us come to Krishna consciousness with a very traditional, small conception of God. God is great, God is love, God is this, whatever, God is beauty. And all of those are true, but to get a little glimpse of what that really means, the greatness of the Lord, the beauty of the Lord, then that means our attraction for him will increase and increase. Okay, so continuing on. Only by such electrification is the energy of matter displayed in various actions and reactions. Therefore, the inert matter is neither efficient nor the material cause of the cosmic manifestation. So, just this topic of the creation by the Lord, as it's mentioned so many times in the Bhagavatam, so many places. And here we are at the end of the second canto. We've already had a few chapters of all the details, of some of the details of the creation and the different species of living entities that were created and their place of habitation, etc., etc., how things gradually evolve. But this creation is mentioned over and over again in the Bhagavatam to solidify our understanding of the potency, of some of the potency of the Lord. In Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments, some of his comments, and I'm not sure if it's here in the second canto or if it's in the third canto, because the third canto is going to start another description of the creation. So we're not finished with the creation. We're going to go another description from a different perspective in the third canto of the creation. So in Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments, he says, "Oh, why are you talking about the creation again and again? We already know that." And then he goes on to explain why he's talking about it. He's talking about it because, yes, we know it on one level. Yeah, everything's created by the Lord. But we're not really, in my neophyte stage, I'm not really totally accepting it. And I'm tinged with an atheistic mentality. Oh, it's happening by chance. Oh, it's this or that. Oh, yeah, Krishna's in control, but this happened by chance. This is, you know, yeah, but this was just, you know, a fluke. No, everything's happening by the creator. So we hear about it. The point being made is that we hear about it over and over again because it's one level that we can, it's one very recognizable level that we can relate to the supremacy of the Lord on. For example, the 10th beginning, this chapter, 10th chapter, beginning, it said, Atrasarga Visargascha gave the 10-1 of this second canto, gave the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 divisions of statements regarding the creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, creative impetus, change of manus, science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and the summum bonum, ashraya, the summum bonum. So those 10 topics are repeatedly they're discussed gradually and repeatedly in the Bhagavatam, so that when we get to the 10th canto and hear the intimate pastimes of the Lord, we have an understanding that it's not just a little cowherd boy who's doing cute little things in Vrindavan. He's the supreme potent personality who also is the cause of the creation, etc., etc. That potency is there. And the Bhagavatam systematically goes through these topics because residually we have these tendencies to think it all came from nothing, or there's no God in control, or we're influenced by Mayavad philosophy. And so to cleanse our heart, the reader's heart of the Bhagavatam, all these topics are discussed to cleanse out that misconception in our hearts. It's there. Sometimes very subtly and sometimes very grossly. But and I just thought of something. Cleanse our heart. Anyway, see if it comes back. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada just said, therefore, inert matter is neither the efficient nor the material cause of the cosmic manifestation. Sri Kapila Dev has said, Yatol mukhad vishpulingad dunmadva sva sambhava apyat mat vedatam bimadhad yatang ni pritag ul mukhad. That's from the third canto, 28th chapter, verse 40. The original fire, its flames, its spark, and its smoke are all one. For fire is still fire, yet different from the flame. Flame is different from the sparks, and the sparks are different from smoke. I'm going to just repeat that again. The original fire, its flames, its spark, and its smoke are all one. For fire is still fire, yet it's different from the flame. Flame is different from the sparks, and sparks are different from the smoke. So So before I go on, let's talk about that. What's the philosophical point Srila Prabhupada's bringing up by giving that example? That, yes, Bhagavati. Achinta Beda Abeda Tattva. And just and why that for this example? Why can you spell it out a little more? Right, correct. Achinta Beda Abeda Tattva. Now, give me an example philosophically what that's talking about. We're not just talking about fire, we're using fire as an example of what?
For the living entities and even all the material world. It's not different from Krishna.
Right, thanks. That the material world is not different from Krishna, it's his potency. And the different phases of creation are his potency. And what? Without his potent glance, it doesn't start. Without his potent glance, it doesn't even begin. Without his potency of providing the ingredients, the pradhan, for Brahma to work from, there's nothing there. Everything is connected to the Lord. Yet, the Lord has his separate identity. Oh, that's the Rite Vitam. You got that one? I'm supposed to be memorizing that verse, but all I have is Rite Vitam down. But you want to? Can you say the whole thing? Would that be a? Not Pratyeta. Yeah. And can you give the translation, please? More or less, because I can't remember.
More or less, unless somebody's memorized the label.
That somebody has, but he's holding his tongue very kindly so that would give us a chance.
He's saying that anything that you think is valuable, if you think it's different or separate from the Lord, then it's illusion.
It's illusion.
And he says it's that reflection which appears to be in darkness.
Darkness. Thank you. Thanks. So that's what's called one of the verses in the Chatur Sloki Bhagavatam, which we get to. The essence of the Bhagavatam, there's nothing outside of Krishna. And if anything appears to be outside of Krishna, that's illusion. Nothing is beyond his jurisdiction. And simultaneously, he's not involved in it. He's not involved in the material. Here's that verse, our verse today. There's no direct engineering by the Lord for creation and destruction of the material world. But by his potencies, he's arranging everything. So that's better. Then you can smile, you know. He's arranging everything. He's not separate. It's all part of his potency. I'll continue. Okay. In every one of them, namely in the flames, in the sparks, and in the smoke, the integrity of fire is present. Yet all of them are differently situated with different positions. The cosmic manifestation is compared to the smoke. Because when smoke passes over the sky and so many forms appear, resembling many known and unknown manifestations. So isn't that interesting? We're thinking that this cosmic manifestation is so solid and so permanent and so our situation is so, you know, sure and firm, and it's compared to smoke. And as we know, the lifespan of smoke is, it dissipates very quickly. Even if it does appear from millions of burning acres in Canada and spreads all over the United States and floats over to Europe too, in a little while it'll be all dissipated. So that The manifestation, which means what? This material world, which means what? Our life in this one lifetime. It's so flickering and temporary. And it's our misunderstanding to identify it as who I am. This is who I am. Okay, continue on. The sparks are compared to the living entities, and the flames are compared to material nature, pradhan. One must know that each and every one of them is effective simply because of being empowered by the quality of the original fire. So you might remember in the description of the universe of creation, there was the situation where all the demigods in charge of the different functions, the, you know, hearing and sight and touch and sound, et cetera, they wanted the cosmic being to arise. So they entered into the cosmic being and he didn't arise. What was the factor that made the cosmic entity arise to action? Was the entrance of consciousness. And when consciousness entered, the consciousness of the Supreme entered into the living being, then it could arise. Otherwise it was just, what, a lump of matter. So one must know that each and every one of them is effective simply because of being empowered by the quality of the original fire. Also interesting to note in the atoms, in all the atoms, even the inert atoms, there's a super soul. I just heard that in my Bhagavatam study from Gauranga Darshan Prabhu. So there's a super soul in those atoms, and that gives salt its salty nature. If there was no super soul in that grain of salt, it wouldn't be salt. It wouldn't have its salty nature. I just thought it was a very interesting expansion of that point. Okay, therefore, all of them, namely material nature, cosmic manifestation, and the living entities, are but different energies of the Lord, who's compared to fire. So just on that point too, and that's why oftentimes people get misunderstanding, because they're looking at one particular aspect. They're looking maybe at the cosmic energy, or they're looking at the living entities, or they're just looking at the material nature. And so they'll come studying one of them, they'll come to a incomplete or fallacious conclusion. But all of them together are a manifestation of the Lord's energy in different aspects. And it's such a more complete and soulfully satisfying explanation. Therefore, those who accept material nature as the cosmic manifestation's original cause, Prakriti, the cause of creation according to Sankhya philosophy, are not correct in their conclusion. Poor fund of knowledge. They're not correct in their conclusion. The material nature has no separate existence without the Lord. Therefore, setting aside the Supreme Lord as the cause of all causes is the logic of ajagalasthana nyaya, or trying to milk the nipples of the neck of a goat, which was mentioned previously in the beginning of the purport. The nipples of the neck of a goat may seem like sources of milk, but to try to get milk from such nipples will be foolish. So, many of us are more familiar with the anatomy of a cow than we are with the anatomy of a goat. But sometimes when you visit India, all these examples that Prabhupada gives, you know, that are given, Vedic examples, they come alive. So one time we were at Govindakund, out by Govardhan, in Vrindavan, out by Govardhan. So Govindakund is situated at the foot of Govardhan. And then there's just, you know, I'm not good at lengths, but a small space, you know, whatever. And then Govardhan Hill starts there manifesting. So there was an explanation of the activities at Govindakund and etc. So all the devotees were seated around. And I was sort of on the outside of the circle, which would only left like a few feet between myself and Govardhan Hill. And a goat herder came by, and all his goats came walking by me very close. And I got to see, oh, there's the nipples on the goat's neck. These little things, they look like nipples. They're just bags of flesh. So here in this example, nipples on the neck of a goat, if someone is thinking that's compared to the material nature, if someone's thinking that material nature is the source of creation, that's foolish. It's not very intelligent. It's not understanding that nothing is manifest without the will and potency of the Supreme Lord. So, And Prabhupada had started that conversation, that explanation about the nipples on the neck of the goat in a previous paragraph that we didn't read today. So he's just sewing it up to a conclusion, bringing it to a conclusion. So this is, this process of creation is stressed over and over again in this second canto. And in fact, second canto can be described as the process of sadhana. Interesting, okay? The process of sadhana. Because the whole second canto came about because of Maharaj Parikit's question. He wanted to know, what's the source of creation? How is the creation manifest, etc., etc.? And so Sukadeva Goswami, after hearing that very nice question from from Maharaj Parikit, he offers his prayers to the Supreme Lord, and then he begins the explanation of what? What does it begin with? You remember what the second canto begins with? Begins with this, with the, I know what it begins with, because I'm going to ask you what it begins with. Universal form. Thank you. Thank you, Krishna. Begins with the description of the universal form. And so Maharaj Parikit's asking about the process of creation because he wants to hear, you know, ultimately, he wants to hear about Krishna. And Sukadeva Goswami starts with the description of the universal form, and then he describes the sadhana of somebody who is interested in realizing the universal form, what they have to do, meditate him on like this, and see the trees as the hairs of his body, etc., etc. It's a step in God realization. It's the first step in God realization. Why? Because someone who has no conception that God is a person or his potencies, they need to start somewhere. So he starts him off with that. And if you perform that sadhana nicely and appropriately, then you'll come to another conclusion. There must be something behind this material nature. Where did it all come from? And then he gives another, the Astanga Yoga process. He gives another description. And then the sadhana that one has to do to come to realization on that level. So he's giving different steps in the process of self-realization to present an all-encompassing process for everyone, to bring them all up to higher levels of understanding. And and another reason that these are emphasized, they're emphasized to describe the process just to compare them with the process of bhakti yoga. How difficult it is to perform those types of meditations and those different bodily exercises in Astanga yoga and fixing the mind, how difficult it is, what the result of that process is in comparison to the process of bhakti yoga, the easily adaptable process of bhakti yoga, and the higher result, the ultimate result that it gives. So they're mentioned not as a recommendation, yes, one should perform first worship of the Vishvarup, and then one should, yes, do the process of Astanga yoga. No, but as a comparison, they're not recommendations, just to compare the superiority of bhakti yoga. So those are a few thoughts on that, and we have just a few more verses to the end of this chapter. Oh yeah, just a couple. And again, we'll start the process of creation again in the third canto. Any comments or questions or corrections or clarifications? Pran Govinda Prabhu?
Thank you. It's very nice. I appreciate it. I remember recently reading why it is this canto is focused or addresses sadhana. And I remember 5 points. The first one was that Brahmaji explaining Narad Muni about various incarnations and their background, and their purpose, and what are the activities they did. So these 3 points in one. And then the second point was, I'm trying to rephrase what I remember reading. Second one was that establishing Krishna's position as a supreme avatari on the second canto, here, there, especially chapter 7, I believe. And then some few specific pastimes of Krishna also given in this chapter, in this canto. Not the whole elaborate, but specific. And then the third point was, Brahmaji gave a list of the devotees who actually grasp the glorious divine quality of each incarnation, personalities, and they applied themselves, they made their life successful. And the fourth point was Brahmaji asked Narad Muni to grasp this and share this to the others. And then the last point, fifth point was Narad Muni took Brahmaji's instruction with his life and soul. And he's going to do that. So that was the 5 points I gave you.
Thank you. Other comments or questions or clarifications? Okay, so stay tuned for the end of the chapter, the end of the canto, and yet another explanation of the creation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gopi Prema Nandi, Hari Hari.